This is in your best interest. I'm Philipp Müller. This is the second part of the podcast with Calvin Teo, the co-founder and CEO of Funding Societies. In this part, Calvin gives us an overview of alternative investments as an asset class, how it differentiates from others, and how individual investors get access to it. I hope you enjoy it, and if you do, be sure to subscribe and consider leaving us a review and sharing it with your friends.
So let's move on to part two, and that's an interesting section I want to talk about, and this is the first time we are really touching on that topic doing this podcast, is alternative investing. I think, Calvin, you know, you guys are bringing alternative investing, in this case, peer-to-peer lending to SMEs, to, you know, people that might have not had access to that kind of asset class before, right? So what I want to see, what is your kind of view on what actually alternative investments are in the first place? And then what are they make, what, why are they interesting for anyone to have some exposure to?
Sure. I think alternative investment is very broad. I think for us, we are really specifically providing opportunity for the public, both retail investors as well as accredited investors and institutions to invest into private credit or private debt investments for SMEs. And how it differentiates itself, this asset class differentiates itself from other asset classes, is really in three, four ways. I think it is the only asset class that is liquid, convenient, and also easy compared to perhaps other asset classes. And if I may just illustrate that, there is no lock-in period the lock-in period for private credit is relatively short. So as the loans are typically 6 to 12 months long, you don't, unlike say in the case of a unit trust where you are required to lock in for 2 to 3 years, typically for private credit, the lock-in period is 6 to 12 months. So it's relatively short term. And on top of that, you receive monthly repayments, both in form of interest and principal. So it's a relatively liquid asset class that is suitable for, say, young professionals or investors who have a shorter time or investment horizon. And if you have selected a good platform, the whole experience is quite easy because you don't have to spend time studying a stock or learning about goal investments. You just need to ensure that your investment is diversified, that you do not over invest in any single loan, and generally you have a reasonable return. I think for us, we never promise investors, or we never encourage investors to chase for, say, double digit returns. For us, we are oftentimes looking at middle to high single digits, and our returns. And our goal is really to help to preserve and grow the wealth of the public. Because if you make some investors really rich, I need to make some SMEs really poor. So really taking that delicate balance to protect and grow the wealth of the investors. And making it accessible to the general public, not just the ones that are sophisticated, financially savvy, but also the ones that are still learning. I think that has been why we started Funding Societies.
No, and I think this is interesting ending there from you, why you started Finance Society. I think that goes hand in hand with, you know, what we're trying to do at Stashaway as well, right? You know, giving people access to global investments with, you know, no entry requirements, right? And people that didn't have access to such things before. So that's quite aligned there on that front as well. So how yeah?
If I may jump in, right, I think yeah. This is Stashaway. I think that the reality is that you would like to have a very diversified portfolio, and that generally, I think the private credit space is less correlated to the public investments that Stashaways offer. So actually, we see it as a very good complement with each other to really diversify the portfolio of the investors and provide a more stable return.
Yeah, and I think this is where I actually wanted to go to next with you is kind of how do you see, you know, I know, you know, the asset allocation of every individual is also very personal because, you know, we don't know what, you know, I'm in a different financial and life stage than maybe you are, right? So I might have a different portfolio than you have. But where do you see alternative investments in in more of a in a generalization kind of way in an asset allocation for an investor? Do you have a certain percentage that you suggest people to have towards alternative investments, or is it again very personal?
Sure, I think it is quite personal. We do have a statistical, statistically driven recommendation on that front. I think it's quite a personal decision, depending on, of course, your investment horizon, whether do you need the investment to be liquid or not. If you need it to be liquid, then it will be a good choice. If it's at the same time, it also depends on the amount of cash that you have. Because I think for platforms like Stash Away and ourselves, funding societies, our entry investment is relatively low. It's at $500. Mm-hmm. So consequently, you can actually build a diversified portfolio quite quickly. But if it's if for other asset classes where the entry point is relatively high, then in this case, it will be harder for you to allocate funds accordingly. So it's a relatively personal decision. But having said that, if you're putting all cash within alternative investment itself, we strongly encourage that it's being diversified by industry sectors as well. Not just by number of loan count, because every single borrower could potentially ask for 2 to 3 loans in the form of invoice financing, but really diversified by loan by actual number of borrowers with equal dollar for each of them, because if you overly invest in any single borrower, concentration risk kicks in and you can actually suffer losses just like in any other asset classes. So I think diversification is key, not just within a private credit asset class, but also perhaps within other asset classes.
No, that makes perfect sense. And Calvin, just for listeners who may have not been or are not users with funding societies at the moment, can you explain, so the user has to pick each loan themselves, or is it something that you guys say, hey, if you give us $500 or $10,000, we will actually build a portfolio for you that does what you just explained, actually?
Sure, you are able to do both. So in 2016, so we started off as giving the power to the people, enabling everyone to pick the loans that they are interested in. So before we open up a crowdfunding exercise, we'll email to the investors and inform them that, hey, this crowdfunding will be happening in a few hours' time or tomorrow. You can access our platform to review the fact sheet or the report of that particular SME to see if you're interested to invest. But later on, we found out that, hey, our loans are crowdfunded within minutes or sometimes seconds, making it very hard for some investors to participate. And it also increases concentration risk. When that happens, sometimes investors overly invest in one loan because finally I can get in, let me put in more money. So in 2016, we have pioneered what we call auto investment. It's basically a machine bot that you can program. Easily programmed to by giving it standing instructions on the type of loans that you're interested in. As and when the loan that meets your criteria is available, it will automatically allocate your funds to it. So it helps to indirectly create a portfolio for the investors and help them to diversify more further.
All right, thanks for that explanation. I think we'll be shed some good light on what they can do on your platform and how you can help them actually build out that portfolio if they're not as knowledgeable or if they don't want to go through the research process of looking into each individual loan you have on the platform themselves. So that's awesome. What else? So you guys pioneered the way of giving out loans to SMEs, getting investors access to this asset class within the alternative space. Where do you see other alternative investments become available to retail investors? Because I think always the problem is, alternative investments all sounds good. People want to get access, let it be private equity or, hedge funds or, commercial real estate deals. Where else do you see this market of alternative investments get down to the retail level and not just be available to all accredited investors in the future?
I think it really goes down to the development of the fintech sector, right? That financial technology sector, right? That if unless powered by technology, it's actually very hard to offer some of these alternative investments to the masses, to retail investors. I think in the case of Singapore or perhaps Southeast Asia, fortunately or unfortunately, the more robust alternative investment space that has taken root is basically robo-advisor, and I think StashAway is a very notable example. And of course, private credit, which is where we are pioneering and driving. The other investment verticals in seems to still be at a budding phase. So I think it will still take some time for maturity.
Yeah, no, thank you. So this is, you know, for the listeners that are looking at future entrepreneurial ideas, maybe there's some opportunities there as well for them to now, after this conversation, maybe that sparked the interest to think about different business plans of bringing more alternative investments to the masses. So to close it up, I do have a quick question for you, and it's obviously on everyone's mind right now. You know, everyone is working from home. You know, COVID-19 has a tremendous impact in the world and also here in Southeast Asia on small to medium-sized businesses, right? What are you guys seeing in that space, since you're, you know, hands down in it? And how does it affect the peer-to-peer lending space at the moment?
Sure, it impact. I think COVID is making it a hard time for most people, and most companies and industries. For us, there are three main implications. I think on the borrower side, SMEs generally need more capital or need more financing support in this period of time. But the credit risk of them has also increased as well because of the recession, and therefore our approach towards it is really how can we be leveraging on our experience and data? How can we be selective in terms of lending? So still helping SMEs, but at the same time being responsible to the investors. So that's on the SME side. So there's a heightened in credit risk that we need to manage. On the investor side, there is a risk of credit crunch. So we do see some other platforms where investors are funding has reduced, primarily because investors choose to conserve cash in face of this market uncertainty. Or some investors may have withdrawn money because they have lost money in the equity market and they are facing margin calls. So there's a risk of credit crunch on the investor side. I think we're very fortunate that since late 2018, early 2019, we have been actively diversifying our funding sources. So we tell investors to diversify. We ourselves also, of course, diversify our own funding as well.
Yeah.
So we've been able to ensure a pretty stable flow of funding to continuously help SMEs. And of course, the third implication is really funding societies itself. Given that we are able to lend less during this period of time, it does hit our overall revenue and cash flow. And I think we're fortunate that we have received Series C money during April, actually in around quarter one, because we kind of foreseen that 2020 will be a hard time. Hence, we actually started fundraising in the middle of last year. That's enabled us to have sufficient capital to actually ride through this difficult period.
No, I was going to go back there because you mentioned that early on in the talk, and I think that's fantastic news in this environment to be able to raise a Series C and, you know, really set yourself up for the next few years. And, you know, coming, you know, these things are cyclical, right? So things happen, but being strong, you know, from your balance sheet as a company and having the funding will really help you probably take advantage of this time as well and, you know, really grow and help these SMEs come through this period. So, hey, Calvin, I think this was awesome. I think we got sublime insight into, you know, your personal history, you know, entrepreneurship, what sparked it, and how you founded Funding Society with your friend from school, and what it has become now as, you know, the peer-to-peer leader here in Southeast Asia, as well as covering this space of alternative investing. So, again, thank you very, very much for being here. I really enjoyed chatting with you. And I'm sure we might be doing this again in a few years' time and see where all of us end up being.
Thanks a lot, Philip. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Calvin.
That's it for the show this week. Thanks for listening. If you like what you heard, subscribe and leave us a review. The reviews really help us, and we love reading your comments as well. In Your Best Interest is hosted by me, Philip Müller. We're produced by Stashway, and we're mixed by Mo Ramley.